a brand new approach to Homegrown Radio, where you are the star, you are the talent, and you will drive the talking points of the day. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. I'm William Walter, Policy Research Director and Lead Training Organizer with Our Wisconsin Revolution. Unfortunately, Luke's OOO excursion is over. He is no longer playing hooky, and it's not a party anymore.
Yeah, I hear you like to say that it's a party every time I'm not here. Maybe I should be gone more often then, Will. Maybe
that is a long-standing tradition, Luke. That goes back to the previous installment of our time together on air. It has always been a party whenever you're out of town. I like to joke that Papa Luke is gone.
Auto parts. And I would not have understood that reference one bit had Will not caught me up to what I missed.
Yeah, pretty much. But it's out of office.
Yeah, yeah. That's got to be like an old, I've never heard that term before. Referencing as like a triple O or O cubed. I don't know.
See, neither had I. That's why I mentioned it to Aaron yesterday. A recent car commercial I saw was talking about that. You know, you're O to go explore the wilderness or whatever. And I was like, what does that mean? And then the commercial explained it itself that you are out of office. And I was like, that makes sense. But do people say that? Like, have people been
not
talking
us,
like
apparently.
That for years
not
and I've
us.
Just not been made aware? I don't know.
The answer is no.
So, Luke, how was your hooky experience yesterday? You got a little bit of time to yourself.
Tea and lemon and hoping the voice recovers, dude. So we'll see where we're at. But I'm glad to be with you here on this Wednesday afternoon. You're third, fourth? I can't keep track of what Wednesday is your favorite Wednesday these days. It apparently
it's not that complicated.
Tuesdays
Luke.
Are pretty
the
good
because
there's a party
the
when in my absence. So I'm assuming Tuesday got bumped up a little bit higher in the Wednesday list this week.
No, it's still just the reverse order of the week. The closer we are to the weekend, the better of a Wednesday it tends to be.
Okay.
From my perspective.
All right. Well, what are we talking about today, Will? What's on the docket for town call today?
Well, I thought in my opinion, a story that needs coverage. You know, we like to lead local, but in this situation, it's relatively local still. Midwest, sticking to our Midwestern homies. Ohio vote yesterday on issue one. The voters soundly rejected the GOP-backed proposal that would have made it tougher to protect abortion rights. Reading over from the AP, Ohio voters resoundingly rejected a Republican-backed measure that would have made it more difficult to change the state's constitution, setting up a fall campaign that will become the nation's latest referendum on abortion rights since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned nationwide protections last year. The defeat of Issue 1 on Tuesday keeps in place a simple majority threshold for passing future constitutional amendments rather than the 60% supermajority that was proposed. Its supporters said the higher bar would protect the state's foundational document from outside interest groups. Ironically, of course, this became a referendum on how much money outside interest groups could raise from both sides of the aisle. Reading over from a CBS News piece, J.D. Vance, the Republican senator from Ohio, had tweeted on the purpose of issue one being to, quote, try to make it harder for out-of-state special interests to rewrite the Ohio Constitution, unquote. Ironic, of course, because CBS notes that a GOP mega donor has been pouring millions of dollars into the effort to hinder Ohio abortion amendment. This out-of-state billionaire, of course, Richard Uihlein, the Illinois shipping supplies magnate with a history of donation to anti-abortion groups, who was the top funder of the Protect Our Constitution group, having given $4 million of the $4.85 million the group raised. So special interest, Luke, their money was pouring into Ohio for this race, and the voters resoundingly rejected it, about 57-43. This, of course, is setting the stage for the upcoming referendum in the fall. But I think because there was not a whole lot of races going on right now in a similar vein to what we saw with the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, and because of the long-term implications that these races will have, outside spending groups were pouring their money and influence into it. So my question for the audience today is this healthy? Is it okay for national spending groups to be putting their money towards state elections in this regard? Is this an overreach of financial influence in democracy? I'd like to hear your thoughts. Give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789.
Yeah, Richard Uihlein, a familiar name here in Wisconsin as well, not just the familiar premise of having a lot of outside money coming into the state like we experienced in the April Supreme Court election here in Wisconsin, but also Richard Uihlein playing a large role in those donations coming in to the state as well. So something we're pretty familiar with here in Wisconsin. It is interesting to see now these standalone votes, though, in areas that are typically states that are trending or are solidly Republican strongholds, Kansas, Ohio, where you see this kind of 57, 43, 60, 40 margin, Will, that is supporting, and this one kind of is not a direct support of whether or not to keep reproductive rights and freedoms available to Ohioans?
I believe it's Ohioans. That sounds right to me, so I wasn't going
to
correct you if you
didn't wrong,
though,
pause. To me. As I said,
Ohioans sounds wrong.
I don't know. I hate the Buckeyes, so I know that they are the Buckeye State, but the Ohio State team, not a fan of here as a Wisconsin Badger. But
WBNS 10 TV says Ohioans, so I'm going to defer
Ohioans.
To them.
It just sounds weird, but see, that's why I love Wisconsinites, because it just
it's
rolls.
Crisp.
Yeah,
it's
it rolls right off the tongue. It works.
That's how we do it in Wisconsin.
But the fact that we're seeing this similar margin over and over again when it comes to since the Dobbs decision last summer, it is interesting to see that kind of recurring trend of a 60-40 split almost. And this one, again, not specifically surrounding abortion, but a big tent coalition coming out and I believe higher turnout in all than what the Secretary of State was planning to see for this kind of special election that took place in Ohio yesterday. It's just an interesting thing to keep an eye on and see those recurring numbers, Will, that we are seeing in some of these results.
Well, and it goes a little bit farther than just a referendum on abortion, Luke, to kind of provide some context. Issue one would have raised the threshold for approving future changes to the state constitution through the ballot box from a simple majority of 50% plus one to 60%. So essentially, and this is a quote from Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown, by rejecting issue one, Ohioans, there it is again, Ohioans, so that is correct, rejected special interests and demanded that democracy remain where it belongs, in the hands of voters, not the rich and powerful. I think that is probably the core tenet that we have to touch on regarding issue one, is that the Ohio legislature wanted to make it more difficult for the people of Ohio, the citizens, the voters in the state of Ohio, from being able to make changes to the state constitution through the ballot box. Currently, it is simple majority. They wanted to raise it up to 60%, which is, I think, taking the hands out of the people. You're trying to force a vast majority of support rather than just majority support. And that's a conversation that I think I hear a lot on the national level, particularly from elected conservatives, right? They talk about tyranny of the majority when conceptually democracy is meant to be a majority. That's the point. And to give you some of the final numbers, with all precincts reporting and about 58,000 absentee and provisional ballots outstanding, according to CBS News, the measure has failed by a margin of 57.01 to 42.99. As you noted, Luke, this is a stereotypically conservative stronghold, a supermajority in the Ohio GOP legislature put this issue on the ballot with 2/3 of all members in favor. So that's north of 66%. Then it failed by over 13%. I mean, that begs the question, how representative is our democracy really when results like this are coming out time and time again?
It's all the Democratic voting individuals in the state of Ohio. They just are jam-packed in the cities, too. It's very probably very similar arguments you hear against why the sway is here in Wisconsin made up in the legislature that way as well.
How about this then, Luke? Clark County, which was plus 23 Trump, voted no by one vote.
Yeah.
16,015 to 16,014. That's a plus 23 Trump County.
Yeah. When you see the breakdown of numbers like that, it is important to keep an eye on and see where voters are on these issues. 844-967-2789. We want to hear your reactions to this story over here on Town Call. You can listen on the Civic Media app. Take us with you on the go. Head over to the Apple, Google Play stores. You can engage with the show right from the app. Call or text 844-967-2789. We're going to also be joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area coming up for his Wednesday residency with us here on Town Call. So if you've got questions for Dan, you can call in as well, 844-967-2789. It's important to note that Wisconsin has taken a step away from direct democracy like we saw in Ohio yesterday as well, Will. Something you were discussing as we got prepared for jumping on the air today.
Near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, the Wisconsin did not have direct action for direct legislation. Could not put a referendum that was binding to voters directly. That was not something we had. We did have advisory referendums, but that is past tense. We do not have those anymore.
Yeah, and so remember, Luke, advisory referendum are non-binding. It's more meant to be a test of what the voters believe should be done, a suggestion maybe. We could say to the elected officials, hey, this is what the voters think would be best. This is what we should implement going forward. But you are not forced to do so. You are not. It is non-binding. It comes with a name. But the GOP, Wisconsin GOP, decided to get rid of non-binding advisory referendum because evidently it was not enough to ignore the will of the people. They also must be silenced. This is, as I noted, near and dear to my heart, because as we've talked about on the show, this is something that my organization did in Dunn County. Regarding national not-for-profit health insurance program, which passed in a stereotypically conservative rural community that wouldn't necessarily be thought of as a safe location for this. But the point was to prove that these policies are popular with all Americans, regardless of party affiliation. We did prove that. I think a better example might even be on cannabis legalization, right? A number of counties and cities throughout the state have put forth advisory referendums regarding cannabis legalization. Every single one of them win by wide margins, 70-80% sometimes. And perhaps our elected officials don't want to continue seeing that because they're well aware of what the people of Wisconsin think. They just don't want to implement it either way.
Yeah, and so it's a frustrating update when it comes to direct democracy here in Wisconsin. But an interesting result out of the state of Ohio. I don't know if it was as shocking, Will, as the news when Nebraska decided to continue to
Kansas? Are you talking about the Kansas one?
Yes. Kansas. Yeah. See?
Yes, indeed.
Still a little cloudy. I was thinking
I got
Nebraska.
My Midwestern homies. I got our back.
It's Kansas. That's where it was. But Ohio's results yesterday, still pretty shocking. We want to hear your thoughts on them. We're also going to be joined by Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area. You can give us a call, 844-967-2789. You're listening to Town Call across Civic Media.
A fifth dimension, beyond that which is known to man.
Milwaukee's best.
It's a dimension as vast as space and as timeless as infinity.
Hey man, what about Milwaukee, man?
It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition.
I think God would want us to go to Milwaukee.
And it lies between the pit of a man's fears and the summit of his knowledge.
What do you think about Milwaukee?
This is the dimension of imagination. You are now entering the Recombobulation Area.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back. This is Town Call. We are entering the Recombobulation Area today. It is Wednesday. We got Dan Schaefer here. If you got questions for Dan or any questions about the Ohio results from last night, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. Dan, how are you doing this Wednesday afternoon?
I'm doing well. It's a beautiful day here in Milwaukee, so enjoying it.
Nice. Well, we're glad to have you join us here on this Wednesday afternoon. We're discussing, you know, kind of the I don't know what to refer to them. They were the results. I don't know if people are shocked at this point or if this is become the standard in Ohio. And we've got a lot of things to look forward now, though, because you got this standalone election. You got a lot of focus in Ohio yesterday. We can talk about it. But something right around the corner, two weeks away, Dan. Milwaukee, not Ohio, is going to be the center of the political universe again. Then we were so generously loaned the center of the political universe away to Ohio for the last couple of weeks here. But now we're going to take it back. We've got the RNC first debate kicking off.
We've been Wisconsin nice long enough, Luke.
Exactly. It's a Midwest thing. We're courteous about it. But we're going to be hosting, the city of Milwaukee is going to be hosting the Republican National Convention, the first debate, Republican National Committee's first debate. We will be hosting the convention next summer. This kind of kicking off the run to that convention, starting 2 weeks from today. You've written an excellent column about it over at the Recombobulation area. What can you tell us about what's going on in Milwaukee between now and 2 weeks from today?
Yeah, so I think this is the part of the 2024 campaign where things move from the diners and the county fairs of Iowa and New Hampshire onto the debate stage for the Republican presidential primary. And in Milwaukee, the bright lights will be on Milwaukee 2 weeks from today on August 23rd. You know, as I was tweeting about this, someone tweeted back to me saying that is actually freshman move-in day for Marquette University. So not only will we be having about 10,000 people in attendance at Fiserv Forum for the debate, the whole media circus that the debate will invite down in the Deer District and around downtown, there's also going to be, a whole bunch of freshmen moving into Marquette. So it's going to be a really interesting day in the city of Milwaukee. It's kind of the unofficial start of the run up to the RNC next year, of course. But I wrote about this primary and kind of where things stand. And not only just where things stand, just the kind of big picture of this Republican primary, because I feel like there's a big question looming over all of it, which is that Donald Trump is way ahead of the field right now. Yes, of course. But this debate gives an opportunity for a lot of these candidates to share their message with a national audience. But at the same time, there's this puzzling piece of this primary, which is that even if Donald Trump were to lose, even if one of these other candidates were to start have a great debate in Milwaukee, start the momentum towards Iowa, New Hampshire, towards Super Tuesday, towards the primaries, toward all of that, we know Donald Trump is not going to concede. So what exactly is this primary? So I feel like this is a big piece of the primary that nobody is really talking about. Of course, maybe it doesn't matter because Donald Trump has such a huge lead right now. He's at he's in the national polling averages, he's over 53%. So he's at more than every other candidate combined in this primary. So maybe it doesn't end up mattering. But we're still going to be covering the debates. We're going to be covering the polling. We're going to be covering the fundraising, talking about all these storylines with Ron DeSantis and Mike Pence and Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, all these other candidates who are going to be on stage. But how much does it really matter if Donald Trump is not going to concede, because he still hasn't conceded the 2020 presidential election? What makes anyone think he's going to concede in a primary to Ron DeSantis or Mike Pence or any of these other candidates? So I feel like that is the piece of this primary that no one's really talking about as we talk about this like a traditional political campaign. And I think the national political media just has not adjusted to this post January 6th paradigm that Donald Trump has introduced to national politics.
Well, and it feels like, Dan, that there's a lot of the opponents in the Republican primary that still aren't. We've seen indictments come down now last week from Jack Smith in Washington, D.C., surrounding the plot to overturn the election and the violence that occurred on January 6th. And his opponents are besides Mike Pence slightly coming out and being, oh yeah, he lost, and DeSantis slightly saying that Trump lost in 2020, the other candidates in this primary have been hesitant to say that Donald Trump lost. So it's not even just that Trump is not acknowledging that, and the question of
it's because the base refuses to acknowledge it. They're just catering to their base.
Well, is it going to take to the point where we see voters going and caucusing in Iowa and going to the polls in New Hampshire to see where they actually stand on this issue, or do you think we're going to see movement between now and then, Dan?
It's so interesting because, like you, I think, Will, you're right. Is the majority of the party's voters of Republican voters still believe the lie that Trump won the 2020 election. Like, there's polling that suggests that all the Marquette polls that we've seen, I think, say the majority of Republican voters think that the 2020 election, you know, was either stolen outright, or they, you know, have serious questions about the legitimacy, or however you want to phrase it. But I think that's such a problem for all of these candidates, because they're so hesitant to go at Trump because it's going to tick off some of their base. And that's a problem that we don't see with Trump. He's constantly shifting his views on things, and nobody, none of his base ever really seems to change the level of support that they have for him. So I think there's a real, you know, pickle here, but we're still going to be going through the motions and covering this debate like it's a normal political campaign. And I think we have to start to see some adjustment here because of the way that Donald Trump responded to the 2020 election, and the way that he continues to think that the election was stolen from him, didn't ever concede defeat in that election. So what are we doing in this primary? I think that there's this really puzzling aspect of it that nobody's really willing to grapple with, which is that he's not going to concede. So what is this primary? What is exactly, what
is
happening?
Especially if he's not coming to the debates, right? Like, right. If he's not even going to be here to debate them, which he himself has posted on Truth Social, I believe is still his primary mode of communication, that, you know, I have a massive lead. This can only hurt me. Why would I bother showing up? This is my primary to lose, which, like, he's not wrong in that regard, according to the polling data. I thought what was really interesting from your piece, Dan, was comparing the polling data right now to the polling data from 2016's first debate. While Donald Trump still had the lead then at 22.5%, second was Jeb Bush. Third was Scott Walker. Like, these races can change, and they can change very, very quickly. But in that race, still, Donald Trump's lead was at 22.5%. Jeb was at 12.7, Scott Walker at 12. It's in, you can't compare that to today's polling results, where Trump, as you noted, is at 54, DeSantis at 16, and Vivek Ramaswamy is third at 6%. Massive discrepancy today compared to what it was in 2016.
Yeah, and that was, you know, looking at what the field was on August 3rd, 2015, the date of the first Republican debate there, you know, even if you go down the list, you had a number of these candidates over 5%. You had Ted Cruz and Ben Carson and Mike Huckabee, Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, all at 5% or greater. Right now, the only candidates above 5% are Trump, DeSantis, Ramaswamy, and Mike Pence. And so you're not even getting much traction with the kind of rest of the field. You know, Nikki Haley, Tim Scott, Chris Christie, not really registering. You know, I think Christie was higher in New Hampshire. Tim Scott was higher in Iowa when you look at the kind of the state by state polling. But Trump is just so far ahead of the field that it seemed. And DeSantis has really floundered so significantly. Like, in late March, he was at 30%. And now he's down to 16%. One of the polls in New Hampshire that I saw yesterday had him in single digits, tied with Chris Christie. Like, his campaign is going terribly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think this is a really important moment for DeSantis, for a lot of these other candidates to come to Milwaukee and have a strong debate. I think this, even whether or not Trump shows up, I think this Milwaukee debate is going to be about the other candidates and whether they can, you know, kind of register some support on a national scale here with the bright lights. But at the same time, it's there's this paradox, because even if they do well, even if they win the nomination, I kind of walk this through in my columns. Like, let's say Ron DeSantis has a really good debate. Let's say he kind of carries that momentum into the other debates that we see out of the fall. Let's say he wins Iowa and New Hampshire and has this, all this momentum, picks up a couple other wins in states going into Super Tuesday. Do we think Trump's going to be like, all right, the voters have spoken, I'm going to pass the baton to Ron DeSantis now and graciously bow out of the race and support the Republican nominee? No, I think it's more likely that he would continue to run as, you know, independent of sorts, than to back any Republican nominee. So I think that's the type of thing that we should really be talking about and considering when we look at the end game of this primary. I think it's either Trump wins or Trump loses and says he doesn't lose and all hell breaks loose, right?
And so we've been experiencing the ramifications of those results over the last 3 years of him not acknowledging a loss. So it will be. You're right. This isn't even something before I picked up the piece yesterday, Dan. This wasn't even something that I was considering. Was what happens if Donald Trump doesn't acknowledge a defeat in the primary? But do you believe that this is going to be even if he is to skip out on the debate 2 weeks from today? Say Donald Trump is not here and he does not come to Milwaukee. He's not in Wisconsin. He skips the debate because he feels that he's got nothing to lose. Do you think that there is the oxygen there for one of these other candidates to be able to start to pick up that steam? Because I have a feeling they're just going to be fighting amongst themselves and there's not going to be any real ground gained when it comes to catching up to Trump, who, if the polling's correct, is above 50% right now, 2 weeks out before the primary.
Can I add to that question for a sec too before you answer it, Dan? Because I was going to ask essentially that same question. I'm curious then, you know, if this is Trump's race to lose, he has complete control. Is there going to be less attention at the debate? I think we both would agree the answer will be yes, but whether or not that matters is the real question. You were talking about if DeSantis, you know, comes out and has a great debate. I guess I'm curious as to your thoughts. Does that even matter? Can you have a great debate as an individual if the purpose of the debate is not to bring Trump back down to earth with the voters?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think to a certain extent, the Republican Party is repeating the same mistakes that they made 8 years ago when they wanted to have, when I think a lot of Republican voters wanted a candidate other than Trump, but they kept kind of like bouncing from Ben Carson to Ted Cruz to Marco Rubio and never coalescing around the one candidate. I think, you know, DeSantis is polling better now than any of those other candidates polled then, even after the drop he's had in the last couple months. So I think the opportunity really is for DeSantis to start to consolidate some of that support. But I think with how poorly he has run his campaign over the last couple months, I think you're even seeing some of these stories about like donors. Like I saw one story yesterday about a big Republican donor kind of jumping to Tim Scott. Well, okay. Are they just kind of going through and repeating those exact same mistakes over and over again? I think there's opportunity if they were to all kind of back one candidate, back Ron DeSantis, for him to have kind of like the mano-a-mano matchup with Trump, which might be advantageous to him. But there's still all these other candidates that are peeling off 5% here, 4% there, and there's not really coalescing around kind of that one versus one that might bring people over to the DeSantis side.
Folks, you're listening to Town Call. That's Dan Schaefer, columnist of the Recombobulation Area, founder of the Recombobulation Area, joining us here on Town Call this Wednesday afternoon. If you've got a question for Dan, or would just like to share your take on the events of Milwaukee, going to be the center of the political universe again 2 weeks from today, we want to hear them. 844-967-2789. Town Call is going to be right back.
Town Call, a brand new approach to homegrown radio. If you'd like to participate in today's forum, give us a call or shoot us a text, 844-967-2789. We got Recombobulation Wednesday. Dan Schaefer is here. Oh, it's been a lot of fun today, boys.
Yeah, it's a blast, and we're thrilled to have Dan join us on the airwaves. Talking to him 2 weeks from today, Wisconsin becoming the center of the political universe again, Milwaukee hosting the RNC's first debate of the 2024 cycle, and what may be surrounding that. And Civic Media is going to be excited to offering coverage of the event as well, so you're going to have to stay tuned for details surrounding that. But we, here in Wisconsin, we know that there is a lot of political and current event news that's breaking, and we will bring it to you here at Civic Media. So this event included, we're going to be thrilled to be able to provide that coverage. If you want to ask Dan a question or Will or I a question, 844-967-2789. We got Ross from Crawford calling in. Ross, what's on your mind on this Wednesday afternoon?
Hey, guys. The question I'm wondering about, and it's kind of always been what I think of as the nightmare scenario of every election for both Democrats and Republicans. But for the Republicans, could you see someone like Chris Christie, if he's so against Trump, do you see him or some other person with that could run as a third party candidate, that sort of run as an independent, as a way to sort of hamstring Trump? Or maybe just in general, do you see any kind of a third party person running on the what you would think of as the Libertarian or Republican side?
That's an interesting question, Ross. Yeah. Dan, you got any thoughts on potential third party run for a more conservative or libertarian minded candidate?
Yeah, I think we've heard a lot of noise this year from kind of that no labels group talking about a third party run. And I do think, you know, depending on how the Republican primary plays out, you could see, you know, a more substantial version of kind of what was the guy who ran a few years, Evan McMullen or something like that, who ran as kind of like a non-Trump conservative option.
I want to say he was
got like the Charlie Sykes crowd very excited, but I don't know if anybody actually was excited outside of that group. But I think it's an interesting thing to think about, because, you know, if Trump doesn't win the primary, I'm pretty sure he's going to run as an independent of sorts, right? He's never going to say he lost. He's just going to keep running and running and running.
Wouldn't that be admitting defeat, though, in a way, Dan? Like, if he didn't run as the Republican nominee, say he were to lose the Republican nomination, by running as another party, as an independent or a libertarian or whatever it may be, if he was running as the no labels ticket, that would be admitting defeat in the Republican primary, no?
Well, conceptually, by running right now, anyways, he's admitting defeat, right? In the sense that if he won the 2020 election, you cannot serve a third term, and he is running for a third term. So, you know, it's very easy to mental gymnastics your way into a situation that you can't get out of then.
I think generally you have to consider the real possibility of a third candidate running in this election, because if Trump wins, which that does seem like the most likely outcome, that he wins the Republican nomination, are you going to see one of these other candidates or somebody else in the Republican field kind of jump in and make a more substantial, realized third party type of run to just say, we're not for this. Because Trump has been unsuccessful. He's been bad for the Republican brand up and down the ticket. Like, are you going to have somebody else jump in? I think you have to think about that as a real possibility this year.
Well, and I think Joe Manchin just has, a Democratic senator from West Virginia, Joe Manchin, has indicated that, well, if the choice does come down to Joe Biden and Donald Trump, that's when he wants to get in to the race. He wants to be that third option then. And I don't necessarily see an electorate that would support Joe Manchin over the other two, especially on a historic third-party run, because it hasn't been done before. Perot didn't do it. Nader didn't do it. They were all unsuccessful attempts in the past. And so, I mean, Teddy Roosevelt failed at running a third-party candidacy. So it's a very difficult thing to do. I feel like this time of the election cycles are always the time when it gets thrown around as like, oh yeah, like I'm considering it then if I want to go, if I'm not happy with the Republican nominee, if I'm not happy with the Democratic nominee. The idea of third party always gets floated around now, but it's not necessarily the most serious suggestion when it comes to offering American voters an alternative to the two-party system.
Well, I think Dan's exactly right, though, about this unique situation regarding Donald Trump. If Donald Trump were to lose the primary, I could see him running third party. But if he wins the primary, I don't think there's any opportunity that any other candidate would step up and run third party. I believe it was a Bill Clinton's speech in 2003 where he said, you know, Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line. I would expect the majority of Republican establishment individuals to coalesce behind Donald Trump, just like they did in 2020, and just like they did in 2016, despite the fact that we heard for months and years in advance that, you know, we don't want him to be our candidate. We want to do all we can to stop him. It just doesn't come to fruition.
Yeah, I think you're right. At this point, the Trump is the Republican Party. That's what it is. I mean, that's what he represents, the party. I don't think the pre-Trump Republican Party is coming back in any capacity. We're not getting the Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan type of ticket anytime soon for that party. And no matter what it is, it's all Trump for the Republicans. It really is.
So another question could be, is 2 weeks from today, is this the kind of audition for who could be the vice presidential nominee for if Trump is to be ultimately the nominee for the Republican Party once again? He's going to have to pick a running mate, and maybe that's why he's sitting this one out. Potentially, if he doesn't show.
He literally posted that on Truth Social, Luke. He said, essentially, like, let them fight to determine who's going to be my VP, which I think is kind of hilarious. It's very confident. It's there's going to be a lot of voters who look at that and they're like, oh yeah, that dude's the man. He's the alpha because of that. That's prime Trump right there. That's genuinely funny.
I did not know that. He's not wrong. He's not. It's like the worst person you know making a great point.
Makes the great point. Yeah.
And that's exactly what he's doing, because I mean, I don't think Pence is going to be the vice presidential candidate again, right? You know, so maybe that's what this debate ultimately is, an audition to be Trump's vice president. My goodness.
We'll have to see. What we know for sure is Milwaukee will be the center of the political universe 2 weeks from today. Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area, thank you so much for joining us here on Town Call. If listeners want to find out more about Dan's work, head over to Substack, search the Recombobulation Area. Dan, take it easy. We'll look forward to having you next Wednesday. At least we got to talk about the Pfizer Forum today a little bit.
That's right. We'll talk about Bucks next time.
Next time. Folks, if you missed any portion of the show, check out the podcast. We'll be back tomorrow at 12:15. Talk to you then.
Take it easy, party people.